Is there a time to till? That's what we're talking about in this episode of Extreme Ag's Cutting the Curve.
Welcome to Extreme Ag's Cutting the Curve podcast, where you get a guaranteed return on investment of your time as we cut your learning curve with the information you can apply to your farming operation immediately. Extreme Ag, we've already made the mistakes, so you don't have to. Managing your farm's water resources is a critical component to a successful and sustainable farming operation. Advanced drainage systems helps farmers just like you increase their yields up to 30% with their technologically advanced water management products. Visit adspipe.com to see how they can keep your business flowing. Now, here's your host, Damian Mason.
Hey there, welcome to another fantastic episode of Extreme Ag's Cutting the Curve. I got Temple Rhodes on here, our buddy, Maryland farmer, XA guy. And I'm going to set the stage here. Temple is a progressive farm guy. Temple's about environmental stuff. Temple speaks a lot about how it is in Maryland with the Chesapeake Bay and the environmental regulations that he's had to comply with for at least a couple of decades now. So you'd think cover crops, reduce tillage, no till. And here I see Extreme Ag video about 10 days ago where he's got disc rippers out there behind these mammoth four-wheel drive tractors just tearing up the ground like you ain't never seen. And I'm like, Temple, what the hell is going on here? So we're calling this episode A Time to Till. I do believe there's a great work of literature called A Time to Kill, or maybe I just thought that, dreamed that up. But the point is, Temple's got his reasons. And he admits he's not going to become a conventional tillage guy because of this, but he's got his reasons. So why did you decide to do this?
Well, I don't know. I started second guessing myself when I got the phone call from my buddy Damian Mason. I get hollered and screamed at. And then we get into a half an hour long conversation of how Kelly Garrett is like sweating bullets because, he's Mr. Carbon credit, conservationist of the year, and here I am out here just mowing down, basically plowing ground.
Here's the thing.
We had that discussion that day.
I hard timed you because I said, wait a minute.
I said
disc ripper, what the hell? Temple, let's go ahead and get the mold board. Let's go to a farm auction from some 83-year-old man who's dying and see if we can get a couple of old seven bottom plows and put them out there. All right. All joking aside, there's a lot of people that still conventionally till. I think it's overdone. And I want to get to that in a little bit. You are not a conventional tillage guy, but you looked at the situation and said, I'm going to go a little bit old school here. Why?
So, in certain situations, think about, how big equipment has gotten lately, giant combines, giant grain carts running across the field. We've got these compaction issues and there's no products really. Like, I don't care what products that, that we can get our hands on. Products aren't going to take care of that hard pan that you're going to get in these high traffic areas, right? Well, then you compile that we've had an ongoing problem for the last, 6, 7, 8 years. I think I looked back after you and I talked. I think the last time that I had tilled that disc ripped that farm or whatever was like back in 2013, I think. So, it's 10 years of us basically kind of beating up on the ground and running over it and having compaction issues. And we were getting through that. But, we do 100% cover crop out here. We've been cover cropping every acre for 25 years. That still does not combat in our soil conditions, the type of soil that we have. It still doesn't combat the compaction issues that we can get with heavy equipment. We get in a hurry, you and I get in a hurry, you're getting behind the eight ball, ground's wet, you decide that you're going to go out there and you're going to run in it because you don't have time, you're harvesting anyway, you're harvesting in the mud, and you're tearing these fields up. So you can't fix that with a product. You can't fix that with A tillage radish. You know, we've heard about how these tillage radishes are going to fix your compaction issues, and they can if the compaction issues aren't that bad. And this specific problem in the area that I was doing all this tillage work at this year was a farm that from the day that we planted this year, right? So, you know, when we harvested the wheat, it was raining every other day. Ground was wet. We tore it up. We ran planters through the mud. We tore the ground up. But from planting, you know, in April when we started on that farm until when we harvested that crop through that growing season, we had 38 inches of rain on that farm. That's more rain than most people get an entire year. We got that just in the growing season. So that ground really took a beating, and it sealed up so tight there was no oxygen left in that soil at all. So there's only one way to fix it. So that's kind of what we did. Now, I have some other plans. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't go out there and just be like, oh, I'm just going to let it sit fallow and plow it and let that dirt sit on the top. As soon as we get done with plowing it like that, we spread a cover crop on it right away. And then we kind of lightly disc it in so that cover crop comes up. So we have some kind of cover. You know, I am trying to still be, you know, a man of conservation, quote unquote.
Well, I want to hear what you said. You're still putting cover crops after the tillage?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we went out there and, you know, we tilled it up and we were getting on it, you know, very close to about right behind the combine. But so as soon as we got across it, we went out there with a spreader and we went out there with cereal grains and spread 2 bushels an acre and then lightly dissed it in. So it's coming up. So we got a cover crop coming on it. And I wanted to just shelter the ground, right? I mean, I wanted a green root growing in it. So I kind of wanted the best of both worlds, right?
All right, so I want to get
to do some
so,
fall tillage.
I want to get into this because this is you went conventional, but only for a day, and then you came in and did something different. So
yeah,
this changes the complexion of tillage. All right, I've been critical. I just drove from Winnipeg down to Aberdeen, South Dakota. The bulk of that drive is along the Red River Valley, which some people know is that beautiful, fertile stuff that is flat as a pancake. Mm-hmm. The problem is it floods about every 15 years because it's a north flowing river. So it thaws in the south and it's trying to go to the north where it's still frozen like an iceberg, right? Almost every acre I drove by, and I mean 95 to 98% of the acres I drove by, fall tilled. And you can say, well, it's as flat as a pancake. It's not going to wash away. Well, when the river comes out of its banks and then recedes, we've all been there when water goes back into a tributary, it takes the stuff on top with it. Also, they do get wind. Trust me, it's very windy up there. I'm sure their reason is it's heavy soil. It's very, very deep top soils and it's flat. We got no choice but to do this. And then the other excuse they'll tell you, Temple, is, well, we're cold up here. By exposing it like that, it'll dry out and it'll start getting warmer so we can plant. I'm like, well, I don't think you're supposed to be planting corn in Manitoba in April anyhow. So I would still say that I understand what their excuse would be. I want you to speak to the amount of tillage that happens everywhere, and then let's bring it back to what you did. First off, do you agree with me that Temple?
No, they're.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Is tillage overdone? Is there too much tillage?
You know, I can't say that. I mean, there's not too much tillage in my area. You know, everybody does things for their own reason. What works better? Their realm. You know, I had a conversation not too long ago with an equipment dealer, and the equipment dealer asked me, he said, hey, look, you know, you're an extreme ag. Explain to me the ongoing trends that are coming. Like, what trends are coming? And I kind of laughed and I said, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, regenerative agriculture is a big trend, sustainable agriculture, a lot of no-till, strip tillage, handling residue at the right time. There's a ton of products that are out there that helps people. You know, I mean, I'd say sprayer sales should be more than ever. Higher capacity planners that do a better job in no-till, that would be a trend that I would say becomes more and more. And the guy stops me and he goes, "That's not what I'm seeing." I'm like, "What do you mean?" And he goes, "I'm seeing high horsepower, a lot of fuel and tillage equipment." And I went, "Are you serious?" Mm-hmm. And he was like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Why?" And he goes, "I don't know why." Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, I can't speak to everyone's reason, but you know, any more guys are becoming better and better and better at growing crops. And higher our yields get, the more and more residue that we have to take care of. And a lot of guys in the northern states, you know, up there around Kelly and stuff, I've seen a lot of fall tillage up that way and a lot of just tillage in general, even spring tillage. But those guys, they have no degradation of the stover. So they got it. They, I think they feel like they need to get rid of it. Now, does Kelly have to handle it? And Kelly's 100% no-till. Does Kelly do a good job with it? Yes, he does. But I've also been to Kelly's farm in the spring after planting and seen his planters have to run it in that situation. And that is not very forgiving. That situation that Kelly and a lot of the guys in the northern states that have a tremendous amount of residue that are used to, you know, ripping and getting rid of the fodder, when you are in a conventional situation, it is very, very forgiving of our planters, you know, in the spring. It is very forgiving. Because mistakes can be made and that conventional tillage covers it all up. When you're in a strictly no-till situation, I've been out to Kelly's where he's got fodder on the ground that still looks new, that it was from 2 years ago. Yep. Like, I'm like, what in the heck is going on here? Yep. And he was like, "This was in beans last year." I'm like, "All I see is corn fodder, dude. What are you talking about?" Yep. And he was like, no, this was corn 2 years ago.
Yep.
And I'm like, "You got to be kidding me."
Yep.
So they don't get a lot of degradation of their stover. So that wipes a lot of that away.
Which is also fine when you're on a 28% slope, having stove that hangs around for a year is very good for you. So I want to get into what you're already seeing. I'll go back to you. We talk about what happens with other tillage. And then you said you don't want to speak for other people. I appreciate your politeness that you don't want to judge or make a decision. As you said, they're doing what they do because it works. I just believe that they're doing what they do because it works right now without having as much of an eye to the future. If your farm ground's worth $15,000 an acre, I would not be in a big hurry to go out and expose it to the Manitoba elements for 6 months
right,
to blow away. All right. What did you went out and did it because you said you had a compaction problem.
Wait a minute. Let's talk about what you just talked about. You just brought that up. So let's bring that into the residue equation. Remember I said about the planter and its forgiveness. Well, there's a lot of people that also believe that when you till it up like that, you can get it directly into the soil profile and you can get it to break down and you can bring those elements in very, very quickly. That's not necessarily true. By breaking it down naturally, like with extract or some kind of products and getting that into the soil, that's actually quicker, it's more readily available doing it like that than if you went out there and plowed it and completely destroyed it and put it back in the ground. And it's really hard to believe, but once you get into a program like, you know, and I hate to keep bringing up Kelly but Kelly is, you know, he's a testament to it. He's done this for years and years and years, and he's showing that breakdown of that old breakdown from years past, he is dragging that stuff into the soil and it's happening much faster. And he's building his soil much faster than what he would be doing is if he was going out there and just plowing the ground. I'm not saying that plowing ground or disc ripping is the wrong thing because I had to do it. So mine was for compaction issues only. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, we'll get to compaction, but I want to address what you just said about incorporating the residue in there. That absolutely, from all of us, certainly of our age, man, if you want to get that organic matter incorporated in soil, it'll rot, it'll decay, it'll create humus, it'll create your humus and all of a sudden get that whole thing. And what we're learning, and I had to talk to Darren Hefty, actually I sat through one of his sessions and had him on the Cutting the Curve podcast to help me understand that it does put organic matter in the soil, but it tends to, because of the tillage, it volatilizes, is that the right word, or it decomposes.
Mm-hmm.
It gives it to you. It's almost like sugar. It's there, but it's not as lasting as opposed to going a reduced tillage. It'll incorporate on a more slow. So like one's like the sugar. It gives you a sugar high, but it is not it doesn't have the longevity. Is that the right way?
Well, a lot of fertility, whether we all want to believe it or not, it is volatile. Whether it's, you know, sulfur, zinc, potassium, somewhat, not that much. You know, they say phosphorus can move through a soil profile. There's others that argue that say phosphorus can't move through a soil profile. But I'm in an environment that they say it will tell you that phosphorus moves through our soil profile quick enough that we have a nutrient management plan in place so phosphorus doesn't get to the Chesapeake Bay. So it does move through the soil profile. And of course, we all know that nitrogen is very, very volatile. When you do use tillage, you're right. It is like a sugar high, right? You know what I mean? Gets in there real quick. You can get it, blah, blah, but it also leaves very quick. You know, this is more of a time release kind of a deal. And I'm not saying it's right, wrong, or indifferent. You know, people have to do with what they need to do. But it is for quite a few years. If somebody went 100% away from tillage, like Kelly, to 100% no tillage, there's going to be a huge learning curve for those guys.
Yep.
And the reason for the learning curve is like what you need. You know, I've said this for years. The guys that do, you know, like what Kelly does and all these other guys do, those guys have to have their no-till game has to be really strong. And that game is on that planter. And you cannot just have a regular wannabe BTO, you know, big-time operator. You got to have a guy that is on point on your planter, not some regular Joe that you can put out there in conventional ground that he can just go bang it out. That is not the guy that you want on that planter. So it does take a lot more, but in the long run, you know, does it save fuel? Does it sequester more carbon by not doing it? All these things play a part of it, but I needed to outweigh my problem. You know, yes, 10 years ago, I had a compaction issue. I had to handle it. That's how I handled it, because 10 years ago is actually when I got this farm. Yep. And it had a compaction issue when I got there. So I wanted to fix it off, start fresh, and then continue on. It lasted 10 years. Did I have a good 10-year run? Absolutely. Yep. I needed to back up and repunt because I couldn't get past these problem areas. And if you get an acre problem area over here and an acre problem area over there, you know, the next thing you know, it's costing you a lot of money. So you can't fix a lot of this with like a tillage radish. You know, I've had guys for years say, oh, you got to use tillage radishes. You know, it'll relieve all your compaction issues. Yeah, they will in a mildly compacted area, maybe in the middle of the field. But like when you get to headlands and places where the grain cart ran, and now we've got sprayers that are on skinny tires, that those sprayers are, they weigh, you know, good Lord, who knows what. They carry 1,600 gallons of fertility across the field. Like we are making big problems. And sometimes we get in too big of a rush in agriculture sometimes because you can't wait until the opportune time to say, okay, I'm going to wait until it dries out enough that I know I'm not going to create a compaction issue. Who's got that time, Damien?
Well, you don't, because you got to make a living, and all of a sudden you got 9% interest rates on operating money, and you got inflationary pressures and
yes.
crop inputs. So here's the thing. I'm going to go through rapid fire here. You said tillage radishes. I get it. You know, that whole thing became a thing 10 or 12 years ago, 15 years ago. We're going to use cover crops, and we're also going to use these radishes. They're, you know, great big deep tubers. They go down a couple of feet. And I think that there's some real merit to that. Also, they move the nutrients up and down the profile, I've heard.
That's correct.
And create porosity. But you said sometimes the products can't do it. Then you said, I did this strictly as a compaction play. Yes, it puts the fodder in the soil and it will decay, but we talked about that's kind of like sugar. It'll give it quick, but it won't have as much lasting in terms of the organic matter. This doesn't set you back probably on organic matter, but it doesn't set you forward. Is that an accurate statement then?
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember, like, what I'm trying to do is yes, I'm getting rid of the residue. Yes, is it going to be a sugar high where, you know, a lot of that stuff will be a little bit volatile? The soil will absorb some of it. But what I'm doing is I went out there, I tilled it. I spread a cover crop. So I'm going to basically what I'm tilling in there, I'm going to absorb back into that cover crop, leave a green root in the system, in that soil, and then back in the spring when I terminate that crop, I'm going to re-release everything that it absorbed by that and put it right back in the soil. So in my, you know, theoretically, I'm kind of going about it a little bit different way, and I'm still being conservative, but I'm taking care of my problem because I don't have a product that can fix it. Now, when I say that I don't have a product to fix it, and we're going to talk about tillage radishes for just a second, I used tillage radishes years and years ago. I used them on a lot of ground. One of the biggest problems was it worked well, and that tuber would go down. But when you got into the heavy compacted areas, that tuber would grow 2 inches in the ground, and the entire rest of it would be sticking out of the ground a foot and a half. And that was a problem for me. And then you would get into some areas where the tuber would go down in the ground and it would be big and fat. And if you had a mild, really, really mild winter and they never really killed off, you know, because once it gets down below 20 degrees and they kill off on a tillage radish, you know, they will they'll die. They stink like crazy. And then the ground kind of seals itself back together, all that. Well, we had a spring, actually two different springs, where they didn't die off. They did a good job. They didn't die off. We had to rely on herbicide to kill them. We killed them in March 1 because we can't, you know, terminate our cover crop till March 1. We went out there, we terminated March 1 and killed it. And then in April, we're planting a crop. Well, we had these big holes that were in the ground with this stinking rotten residue of the tillage radish, and we actually had an adverse problem where the crop went backwards, because when it didn't get planted in the actual seed bed, it actually the seed actually rotted in their spots. We had a poor stand. So I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. I'm just saying
that radishes have their limitations, and you just gave a great example. And I'm trying to amuse myself thinking about you, how much complaining you must have done about the stink.
Man, you have no idea.
All right, so answer me this. Okay, you brought up the weather thing. I have heard it said in Northeast Indiana, where I am from, that my fields don't have as much of a compaction issue because, especially on the right kind of a winter, when we have a winter where that freeze line goes down a couple of feet, you know,
yep,
we can talk about how we've been warmer, trending warmer. You know, we still bury pipes at 36 plus inches down, you know, because of the freeze line. When you get that, and we don't have them as often as maybe we did when I was a kid, but the reality is that does a lot about breaking up compaction layer. I've also had farm guys say, yeah, well, we can talk about the deep freeze breaking up compaction, but also on those dry years, when you start having a year of a drought, you get some big old cracks that break up the compaction layer also. Did you talked about weather, meaning rain, it contributed to your compaction problem. Does the right kind of a winter, if we get a good hard winter, or does that help you say, I'm keeping the disc chisel plow, the disc ripper is going to stay in the barn?
I mean, it could, and we could argue that if you really wanted to argue that. It could. I don't. I've never seen a year. You know, we always go out there and we always shove the, you know, the tensiometer or whatever you call that thing, you know, that we measure where the compaction layer is. And we've had really, really hard winters, and you come out of it and you go stick it in the ground. And I can't sit here and say, man, that really, really worked. Now, is that an old wives' tale? I don't know. Can we get the drought and the cracks in the ground that break it up really good? I mean, yeah. I mean, all of those things can happen. But it just, you have to go. It's no different than going out there and doing a root dig and seeing where the crop is and looking at what's going on underground. Me okay. Making that example that I had to do on those farms, that was me with feet on the ground, knowing that the last 2 years, my yield started to decline just a little bit. And I'm not talking about I was getting a 10 bushel less, yield. It was more of a, I start to see a gradual, you know, decline. I was like, something's going on here, and there's nothing in the world, Damon, you know this better than anybody, than beats boots in the field. So yeah. You go out there, we've taken soil samples, we've looked at the soil samples, we know what our CECs are, we know what our base saturations are, we know what our pHs are in the ground are, we know that we are in balance as much as we can be at this point. But we also know it's got to be something else, because we have a limiting factor. What is the limiting factor, and how can we fix any problem? The easiest way to fix a problem is find your greatest limiting factor at that point. Mm-hmm. And at that point, when we went out there and stuck that rod in the ground, I had a massive problem with compaction, and there's only one way to fix it.
All right, so. And there's going to be a purist, a regenerative person is out here saying there's not just one way to fix it. There's multiple ways to fix it, but that's okay. We're not a regenerative purist. We're just talking about why you did. We're calling this a time to till. You made the decision to till. Where was the compaction layer? 8 inches?
I was anywhere between 8 and 10 inches deep.
Okay, how deep did you till?
And depending on where the field was, right? So, like on the ends where we generally load trucks at, you know, that compaction was at 3-4 inches deep. Right. Yeah, it was, and you couldn't shove it down. Like, you couldn't took a hammer and drove this 3/4 inch rod in the ground.
Now, that's a different story.
And then out in the center of the field.
I would say, I want to ask you this. I would say the area that's obviously just got traffic and traffic and traffic and traffic, that's a different circumstance than the rest of the field.
Yeah.
Do you think you're going to find that where the heavy traffic has been every few years, every other year, you might come in and disc rip, but the rest of the field is a once every 10 year thing?
There's a lot of guys around here, and us including, what we generally do is our high traffic areas, we have what we call a no-till ripper. You know, it's an inline disc ripper that just has a disc blade on the front, straight blade, straight shank that goes down. The shank's only 3/4 inch wide, and the tooth goes down in the ground, has a wing tooth on it. And we'll go down 10, 12 inches deep, and we'll do those high traffic areas. It doesn't disturb any soil on the top of the ground. Yeah. All it does is has a lifting function, and then it lays the ground back down, and you got these little wheels in the back that kind of press that back down. High traffic areas.
I see those, and then I like to watch them. I mean, because it raises the ground. It looks like one of those videos of like when a bridge is having an earthquake, because the ground goes like that.
Yeah. It kind of lifts it up and then sets it back down. Now, could I have gotten away with that on these acres? Maybe not. But what we've seen with the inline, we call them no-till rippers. What we've seen with the no-till rippers is you almost have to do it twice. You know what I mean? Like every year, do the whole thing and go back and go back and go back. In a situation like what I did, I mean, think about the last time that I touched this field. It was 10 years ago, and I've made out great for 10 years. And this one time, I had to go back old school on it, 1 in 10 years, And then I immediately put a cover crop right back on top of it. Like, I'm not out of the loop very long. I mean, just period of time, basically from the time that the residue gets buried till the time that the cover crop comes up. What do we got, 10 days that I'm kind of laying fallow until something's happening? So I'm not really doing it very long. And I'm not saying that, you know, maybe that's a new program that comes out.
Well, that's what I was going to do. Anyway,
Let me
answer you that, because that was one of my thoughts. Traditional, you did something you haven't done in a long while. You went back a little bit old school, but you didn't do it the same way. Traditionally, you'd have ripped it all up, and then you'd let it sit like that from November, whatever it was, 15th, until sometime in April or early May.
Correct.
And this time.
Now, I mean, we were ripping in October, but yeah, from October until basically, you know, March, when we could have got back in there and started working ground down, and then we would have, you know, planted in that. Now, I'm not doing that. Like, we literally went in there, disc ripped it, spread a cover crop, lightly went over it with a vertical tillage tool, and leveled the ground all out. And now we've got something growing in it. I pretty much have the bed that I'm going to plant in the spring.
Hey, what's that thing?
I can just go.
Hey, what's that thing, Temple? You know, putting lipstick on a pig and calling something by a different name. What'd you call it? Inline vertical tillage tool, which really just means disc. Anyway.
Yeah, you're talking about the vertical. I didn't say inline. That was the inline thing, was the ripper, no-till ripper.
Yeah.
The vertical tillage tool is really
a straightened out disc.
A disc that runs really, really light with wavy blades. How about that?
Yeah, it's a straightened out disc.
Which,
way,
that thing creates a lot of compaction as well.
Yeah, it does create compaction, but you do it sparingly. Can I ask you a question? Do you think from breaking up the compaction, one of the benefits they would tell you about, like the inline ripper that you talked about doing in your traffic areas, is that it gives a chance for water to infiltrate. Some of that water is going to freeze, expand, therefore pop and break up a compaction layer. That's one of the logics, I think, behind it. You won't get that as much because you didn't rip and then let it sit for 5 months or 4 months or 6 months.
No,
you ripped and then went back in and did the cover crop. Do you think that you'll find that it was just as beneficial to have done the breakup of the compaction layer? Or do you think that if you had ripped it and let it sit, it would have been even more beneficial?
You know what? I didn't want to give a chance where you made a comment a little while ago that you've got ground that's worth $15,000 an acre. And I'm not saying mine's worth $15,000 an acre, but some of this ground that I farm for some of my landowners, it's worth that kind of money. And I'm not going to let one inch of it, not one speck, if I got anything to do with it, go anywhere. I want it to stay right there. And there's only one way to get that to happen. If I'm going to do what I'm going to do to fix my problems that I have, that part of is my problem with big equipment, blah, 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 and I'm making a compaction problem, I'm not going to let it go anywhere. And I'm going to put that cover crop on there. Now, if you ask me, did I do a side-by-side comparison of where I didn't put a cover crop on versus where I did put a cover crop on?
Yeah.
No, I didn't. And I'm not going to, because I want that cover crop back on there because I believe in retaining whatever nutrition is out there that's going to be released by the stover that I plowed under. And whatever is left out there from my previous crop that my crop didn't pull up, I don't want it going into the bay. I don't want it going anywhere. I want to pull it back into that plant. And then when I terminate that cover crop, I want to be able to break it down with something like extract, put it back into the soil, and have it for my corn crop coming back. It's a revolving door that I'm not going to – I just figured out that in my program that I can involve some old school.
I almost wonder if we might have a new hybridized method. Is this the way to do it every year? No, but if you think you've got a compaction issue, is this a new methodology? Do the rip, let it go a week or 10 days like you did, then go ahead and then get very light tillage and then put your cover crop on. By the way, the rye, you put rye on it, you said?
Actually, I did a wheat clover blend.
Okay.
So I put a legume in there and I put wheat in there. So it's a cereal grain with a legume.
Yeah. Which, the more species of cover crop you put on, the more benefit you get, according to my reading. What's the stand correct look like? 4 inches of plant growth?
I mean, right now it's probably, it's 2 to 3 inches of plant growth out right now. And I mean, and it's pretty much, it's covering up the ground and it's right where we want it to be. I'll have to do some videos on the roots this winter, but it looks good.
Getting the benefit of the roots, cycling it. All right. I think we're going to move on then. Temple talks about a time to till. This is my last question for you. Purists would say that all you did was move the compaction layer from 8 inches down to about 12 inches where your ripper went through. Your response?
Nah, that didn't happen. I mean, they can talk about that all they want, and I've heard that before. But if that was the case, out of all the years that we've been doing it, we'd be down to 36 inches by now, and we're not. It still comes back at those same levels, 3 to 4 inches in high traffic areas, and out in the center of the field, somewhere between 7 and 9. That's basically where we are.
And I said 8, and I said 8.
You're perfect.
You're the only person that appreciates my agronomic expertise, which is really not expertise, but you know what? Shall we say? And I should also point out that I referenced $15,000 farm ground, but I didn't say that mine was worth that. I was more talking about the people along the Red River Valley in the Dakotas when I said that. And if you think that my farm ground is, bad, you don't even need to take my word for it. Just take Mike Evans. He has insulted my farm ground. I'm afraid to even reference my farm ground with him because of he's hurt me. He's hurt my feelings. He really has.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you, and I'm going to cuss on your podcast, and I probably shouldn't. But Kelly referenced the reason why a lot of times products work on my ground is because it always works on shitty dirt.
Those Iowa guys. All right. His name is Temple Rhodes. My name is Damian Mason. And we've got literally hundreds of these episodes of Cutting the Curve with great interviews like this, talking about issues and topics and practices and products and things that you can apply to your farming operation. We call this a time to till. Maybe you do have a time to till. Maybe you have questioned whether you're over tilling. Maybe you have a place where you could benefit your soils by doing an experiment like Temple did, where you break up a compaction layer, then come back and get cover crops going on it. You know what? We're here to give you answers and ideas that you can take to your farming operation. If you want to take your farming game to the next level, for $750 a year, you can become an Extreme Ag member. $750 a year. Get access to exclusive information. You can get online communication with guys like Temple to ask them questions. You also get special offers like we're doing with Nature's, where you can go to the Commodity Classic. Your admission is free if you are a member. Think about that. So you're basically getting a bunch of your membership money right back. Till next time, thanks for being here. He's Temple. I'm Damian Mason. Share this with somebody who can benefit from it.
That's a wrap for this episode of Cutting the Curve, but there's plenty more. Check out extremeag.farm, where you can find past episodes, instructional videos, and articles to help you squeeze more profit out of your farm. Cutting the Curve is brought to you by Advanced Drainage Systems, the leader in agriculture water management solutions.